when you open the door for somebody else.
Welcome, everyone, to the Vaccine Conversation with Melissa and Dr. Bob. We're so excited to be with you again for another exciting episode of this podcast, this timely debate that we are not allowed to have. We're having it here, and we're having it with you. That's right. You heard correctly. This is the Vaccine Conversation Podcast.
And I'm here too, you guys, but I'm just finishing my snack really quick. So Melissa's going to give you a little introduction.
Okay. So I did a post this week about Maine Senator Robert Foley, who spoke out in the legislature about his feelings on mandatory vaccines and eliminating all exemptions. And I'm going to play this video for you. I'm going to put it on my speakerphone. Hopefully it comes through well. Again, this is Maine Senator Robert Foley. And he gave this little speech as part of his community duty to stand up for parents who have dealt with vaccine reactions for their children. And this is opposition to LD 798 in Maine.
Senator Millett, Representative Cornfield, members of the Committee on Education and Cultural Affairs. My name is Robert Foley, and I represent the citizens of Senate District 34, which includes the towns of Kennebunk, Wells, North Berwick, Lebanon, Acton, and part of Berwick. I'm here today to oppose LD 798 and any other bills related to changes to the current laws regarding philosophical, religious, or personal exemptions for parents choosing to not immunize their children or to immunize them under a different protocol. My wife and I were parents of a two-month-old daughter who died 32 years ago, just 36 hours after receiving her first set of vaccinations, including the DPT shot. There's not a person in this room or in these halls who will ever convince us that those shots did not play a significant and vital role in our daughter's untimely and unwarranted death. Our daughter was a healthy, vibrant baby weighing 7 pounds, 11 ounces at birth, receiving an APGAR score of 9 and exceeding all growth markers for her birth until her death. Her doctor the day before she died remarked how well she was doing in comparison to the standardized growth charts where she registered above the 90 percentile. After her death, her doctor secured the remaining quantities of vaccine serum he had for the possibility of testing the vaccine serum for potential imperfections. Inquiries to the state medical examiner's office, the Maine CDC, and federal CDC regarding the testing of the serum were rebuffed as unnecessary and potentially problematic for the vaccination regimen being implemented throughout the country. We were told on several occasions that no good would come of our pursuing the testing we were requesting. It was time for us to move on. We were left with the status of diagnosis, no known cause of death, sudden infant death syndrome. My wife and I were not informed of the state by the state of the federal CDC that the vaccination injury court even existed for our appeal of the testing of our daughter's vaccine. And let me be clear, we went after vengeance. We were after truth. If vaccines are so safe, why is the federal government exempted all manufacturers of any liability, and why has the vaccine court paid out over $4 billion in damages? Fortunately, my wife and I had two other children after our daughter's death, both similarly healthy, with similar growth progressions, but neither of them had vaccinations so early in their lives, and neither had the DPT shot, just the DT. We did not start vaccinations till after 6 months, and never multiple injections at any one time. As a result, my wife and I used the philosophical exemption requiring our children to be vaccinated under different protocols. We were very, very diligent parents. Our doctors understood our concerns and respected our philosophical feelings and beliefs. We never put our children or anyone's children in danger by exercising our rights as parents. Every school they attended, from pre-K all the way to college, equally respected those rights. This bill will prevent many students from attending Maine schools. Many foreign students from Europe, Japan, Asia, the Middle East, and beyond are not currently exposed to the same vaccination regimen required by this law. In fact, many countries do not even require vaccinations. Many immigrants coming into our country have no vaccination histories, and yet we let them into our schools without the same questions. I do not wish a child's death on any parent. That pain is with me today. I only ask that people have some compassion for the wrenching decisions that my wife and I had to make as a result of our daughter's untimely death. They were not easy decisions and were not made without a great deal of contemplation, consultation with our medical providers. Unless you believe that healthy babies simply die for no reason, I ask that you respect and understand the difficult decisions that parents who have had a tragic vaccination reaction like ours have faced.
And so that was his speech at the beginning. I hope you guys could hear that okay. And you could just hear the emotion in his voice. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's hard to listen to that because he sounded like he was on the verge of tears like the entire time. And, you know, we just talked in another podcast about DPT and the damage from that. He's saying 32 years ago, he was told not to pursue questioning this. Wow. He was told not to go get it tested from the lot of the vaccine that she received because it was going to decrease confidence in the vaccine program that was being rolled out all across the country. They said, you just need to move on. Hush, hush. This is the end of it. And we see this happening over and over and over again. And that silencing of parents. And, you know, I like everybody does, I applaud him as a father to come. And, of course, as a senator himself, but a father, you know, I'd like to see more fathers being more vocal in this fight. Because every single woman that stands up to protect her children, those children have a father who almost always is on totally on board with this because they've seen the same problem happen in their own family. And yet we see the women are more likely to just put our reputation out there and not care that it's going to ostracize us because that's how we fight for our children. Men tend to be a little more reserved, I found, as it relates to this issue. And that's got to change. That's got to change. And there's a reason that every time you see a man testify, like it goes viral in our community because everybody's like, oh, thank God, there's a man talking about it.
Yeah.
The truth is we know men are talking about this all the time. They're talking about this at home and with their family and friends. They're just not outwardly talking about that. And this is directed to all of you men that are listening right now. This has to change. It has to change. You need to stand side by side with your woman who has been putting herself out there protecting your children. You need to hold her hand and hold the sign and come out there and put yourself out there and make sure you are doing your part because each of these children has two parents that are there to protect and support them. And we cannot continue to put this burden just on women. And we already know as a society, we still do live in a patriarchal society. Women are not believed. Every time you see an interview, it's the woman, you know, who's the parent, the mother, and it's against the male doctor. Every single time you see these media articles, and they do that because one, it's a doctor versus parent, and then it's male versus female. And you just don't see the same kind of credit and value given to a woman's opinion. She's just a mom. What does she know? And I love how Robert Kennedy talks a lot about believing mothers and how many intelligent mothers he's come across who are being silenced by the media. And the press is doing their role in actually pretending like these women don't have a voice, shouldn't have a voice, and therefore the children they're protecting don't get a voice either. And that has to change too. You know, we're in this movement, the social movement of the Me Too, listen to women. Women have rights and they have a right to express themselves and be heard, and their truth needs to be heard. This is no different. This is no different. And women need to be heard on this as well. All of these just mothers raised every single one of those male doctors. Okay. Yes. So let's just be real for a second. Every single one of those male doctors who decides to come up and look at the women in these legislator meetings like they are just hysterical and uneducated and whatever. Every single one of those people has been raised by a woman. And how dare they? How dare they try to look at these women and disrespect them when they were actually raised, given life, nurtured, nourished by women? And do they think their own mother makes up everything all the time? Or do they value her opinion? Yeah. Did they value her opinion when they were growing up? Wasn't she the beacon of light for them? Wasn't she the be-all and end-all is the mother, right? Every child, the best person you want to be around is your mother, boys and girls. So how does that go from that relationship like that and that level of respect to all of a sudden disrespecting, degrading, and discriminating against all of these women who have the courage, the guts to come out there and say something? They have more guts than some of these men do, I'm just going to say, because Men don't want to necessarily put themselves out there the same way. Not to say they don't have the same belief system. And I know that they still do a lot and contribute in other ways. But it has to be more. It has to be more. We need to see half of the videos that go across our community should be dads. Because that's about half of the population. Yeah. And it's unfair for us to have to shoulder this burden all by ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because it really does feel, already it's isolating in general, but when you have that dynamic of male versus female, it's just this very indirect type of aggression. And it just, it takes away from your feeling of being able to have a voice and speak your own truth and to be a smart and educated person. You're questioned right away. There are so many things wrong with what's going on, but I'm giving a call to action for men out there. Cause I know there are a lot of male listeners that we have. I get contacted by a lot of men who will say, thank you so much for your posts or the podcast. I've been listening. And, you know, men tend to like really like factual interpretation of things, I find. They tend to be a little bit more logical on average. And so they want to see the facts and they like to see things broken down by statistics and facts. And maybe that appeals to them differently because as a society, we don't really encourage men to be openly emotional, unfortunately. And so we've actually squashed that part of our generation of men. So they only tend to be thinking in the head and not thinking in the heart, where women tend to think a lot more in the heart. Okay. And so they tend to be open to listening to that parent who's struggling with the child and what they deal with. Women tend to just feel the pain of the other mother right away, where men need to see it on paper. Yeah. I need to see the facts. I want to see the numbers. And so I tend to do a lot of numbers and all that kind of stuff. So I have a lot of men that contact me and say, hey, I really enjoy this. They share a lot of my stuff. And I know they're listening to the podcast. And I know we've got a lot of doctors, healthcare practitioners that are male as well that listen to this. And what I want to say is, this is a call to action to be more present. Step up to the plate. Be there with your woman. Be there to support your child. Because it can't just be us. And it's been us far too long. And we need somebody else to help carry the torch. We cannot do it by ourselves. And I know you are out there, men. I want you to feel confident enough to step up and not be worried about, you know, it's totally off topic, but I just happened to watch this comedy special yesterday where she was talking about a study and women's greatest fear is violence. Men's greatest fear is ridicule. And this is a study done. And this is the difference, how men and women look at things differently. And because that fear of ridicule is so strong, I can see why men potentially don't want to put themselves out there. They're afraid of being shot down. That's so hurtful to the to their esteem, to their confidence, to their ego, that that actually hampers them so greatly. But I'm saying over that, let's get over that. And we all need to stand together. And sorry, I made that much longer than I meant to. And I didn't mean to, but like, I love when I see men talk about this, but at the same time, everybody makes such a big deal when a man talks about it and nobody's making a deal when the woman's talking about it. And I find that to be so shameful. I see so many women in these, you know, the fights, the Congress is filled with the women that come there to stand up for their children. And it's like a, you know, 8-to-1 ratio. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, they obviously go home to the husband who's the father of those same children. So we need to really do better. I think we need to work on this. And as a woman myself, we need support. We do. Yeah. We actually need our men to be there in the trenches, you know, with us.
Yeah.
And so that we already do so much on our own. We don't need to shoulder this burden.
Right. Yeah.
What do you say about that, Dr.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah, that's a perspective I honestly will say that I don't put a lot of thought into. So I
hadn't really thought about it much until I just said it just now. I mean, I've seen people talk about this, but I had not.
Well, and I think an equal point is we all need to get out there a lot more and talk about this. You know, the more vocal we are about these issues, the better. So, thank you. And again, that was Connecticut?
Maine.
That was Maine. Yeah. Well, we're getting our thoughts are still with all the states that are facing these mandatory vaccine laws. And we appreciate, you know, an actual legislator getting up and sharing that story. It's such a common thing I've actually heard from other doctors where when a baby dies of SIDS, the coroner or the medical examiner will purposely not examine the brain for causes of death that would have been vaccine related, mm-hmm. the parents will ask them, can you study levels of aluminum? Can you look for inflammation? Can you look for cytokines? You know, some of the new things we know might be related between SIDS and vaccines. The medical examiners just will not. I will not examine anything that's controversial or will, paint, vaccines in a bad light. I'm just going to do the standard autopsy. And it's a tragedy. It was going on 32 years ago and it's going on.
I've seen today. Where somebody said, coroners actually said, I cannot put that down as a cause of death. I am not allowed to list that as a cause of death.
But they're not even allowed to make the autopsy.
Oh, yeah.
Do that part of the autopsy. So it's, today's topic is something that I think is very, personal to me, and because I've lived this topic for so many years.
I mean, because you're a pediatrician, and this is about why to pediatricians.
No. So this is actually, I think, about the kind of the relationship and the interaction between the parent and the doctor.
So this is why do pediatricians kick you out?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's why do pediatricians kick you out of their office if you don't follow the full CDC schedule? Mm-hmm. But also kind of equally, why do doctors even feel that way? Like, why are they so passionate about feeling like vaccines should be mandatory and that they, they feel like you shouldn't be their patient if you don't vaccinate? Why is it so important to them? And I thought I would maybe take you into my mind as far as maybe why. I mean, I was never that way, but I used to think the same ways in a lot of ways. Like, I used to share a lot of these reasons that doctors have today, although I've never had any mandatory vaccination policies in my office. Most of my patients don't do any vaccines, so that's kind of what I'm most used to now. But so I think it kind of starts off with basically every doctor has seen a child die of a vaccine-preventable disease, like a vaccine or a vaccine-targeted disease, we like to call them. Probably every doctor has probably seen at least one kid die. And that's hard. That's honestly hard. If you saw a kid die from meningitis, or you saw a kid die of the flu, or if you very rarely saw maybe a kid die from measles. I mean, imagine how that stays with you. So, I can't necessarily, I think, blame a doctor for thinking automatically like the worst case scenario. I saw one kid die of measles, so that means every kid in my practice is now at risk of dying of measles. I guess it's just very.
You haven't seen somebody die from measles. You're just saying
right, exactly. Yeah,
just to
theoretically.
Clarify.
Yeah, theoretically. So that's kind of where I think a lot of doctors come from. Now, I would say the vast majority of pediatricians, once they start private practice, they'll never see a child die from a vaccine-targeted disease. But when you spend 4 years in medical school and 3 years in a hospital training, and you're around all the complicated conditions,
worst case scenario,
you see a kid die of this disease. And again, since I left my training, since I was done with my training 21 years ago, 21 years of private practice pediatrics, I have never seen a single child not just die, but no one's been severely harmed by any of these diseases at all. So. That's kind of where your pediatrician, I think, number one, is coming from, that your doctor doesn't want your child to be that next case in there, that's going to pass away before their eyes. So, but then I think you add that trauma to their brain, and their mind and their memory, you add that to the mantra. There really is a mantra that we are taught: vaccines are the best thing ever invented, the greatest thing in medicine ever. They're just so good that we really, it is right to mandate them, and they are, of course, safe and effective, and they save lives. But
and without them, it will be a disaster.
Right? Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That is grilled into us. Yes. That is absolutely grilled into us. So that combination in our training is a very powerful combination. I mean,
it's an indoctrination.
It is.
Of sorts.
Yeah. It absolutely is. So we hear that and we trust that. So then we basically we trust the policymakers. We say, I'm a pediatrician. I have to learn everything there is to know about kids. I could never research vaccines on my own. I have no time to put into years and years of a vaccine safety research to study all the data myself. So I basically have to trust the policymakers. I have no choice. Like, I just, the CDC says they're safe and effective. My medical school teacher said they're, you know, they should be, you know, so important. They should be mandatory. So that there's just that inherent trust. Just like you trust
a blind faith.
Right. But you trust all aspects of your training. You trust what you were taught about ear infections. You trust what you were taught about
antibiotics.
You know, yeah, antibiotics. You know, vomiting and diarrhea. You know, how to diagnose rashes. I mean, it's your entire training. You just have to kind of have that level of faith that every part of it was completely true.
Because you're memorizing the facts that are given to you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not, you're not given two sides of facts of some people think antibiotics are good, some people don't. It's like, this is what antibiotics do, this is how they work, this is when you need to prescribe them. It's just, it's like one set of data, one set of information. You memorize that. So that becomes your skills. That becomes like your knowledge on the subject because it came from one place. And that's what you memorize. I mean, it makes sense.
Right, like, right. And then you're never taught about or you never see vaccine reactions in your training because you're taught that they don't happen. And you know what else we're taught? We're taught, of course, correlation does not imply causation. So that even if a kid comes into your ER during your training and they're having seizures and they just had vaccines that day, you are basically taught, well, scientifically, there's no proof that vaccines were the cause. That kid could have had a seizure anyway, you know, that day. And it could just be coincidence. So since there's no proof, it's conveniently there's no cause, and I would actually say that, I mean, you'll hear your doctor tell you that, you know, severe reactions don't happen. Yeah, there's that 1 in a million chance of anaphylactic, you know, severe allergic reaction, but other than that, they'll flat out tell you severe reactions don't happen. And I would say that they honestly believe that. They probably do believe it.
It's so rare, it's next to zero. That's what I've heard.
Right. And I would say your doctor actually is not trying to deceive you. Your doctor honestly believes that.
I think so too.
Because that's what we're taught. And, you know, we're taught to look at, you know, the narrow amount of data that they show us. So,
well, people try to say doctors are complicit in this situation because they should know better after what they're seeing. And I think in the way that they are complicit is the fact that they should be doing research on their own. Even if it takes a little bit of time, this is pressing enough to do that research. So in just blindly believing or just taking one side of it and just kind of accepting that with faith is not good enough when you do have enough reported cases. There are enough parents, you know, hundreds of thousands of parents that are questioning things. If I was a doctor that was totally believing this one side over here, I would still be going, where is this coming from? How can there be so many? There can't be that many people that are brainwashed. There can't be that many people who are uneducated. There can't be that many people who just don't get it. There are too many red flags of saying something's going on. So I think they're not complicit in the sense that they know flat out they're causing injuries and they're purposely lying to you. I think, like you're saying, I think they genuinely believe what they're being told and all of the things that go along with it and all the statistics from the CDC about flu deaths every year and all these things. I think they genuinely believe that. But I think where they are complicit is they should be researching this, something so complicated and complex. This needs to be something that they delve into personally and privately outside of just what they're given. It's not good enough to just accept what you're told when it comes to the health and safety of children.
Right. And that's so funny. I actually wrote that down as my next thought because I knew I'd forget it by the time you were done with my monologue. Sharing your ideas. I think that's what made me, that's partly what made me investigate this so thoroughly because by far, giving vaccinations are the single most complex medical intervention your child will ever receive. And it is also the, by far, most complex part of any pediatrician's day. You know, all the care we give, it is the absolute most complex part of it. It's what we receive the least amount of training. Mm-hmm. We get all kinds of training on cancer and heart disease and allergies and lung disease, asthma, developmental problems. I mean, our whole training is spent learning all the things that don't happen very often and how to make sure we don't miss them.
The handful of patients that you have.
Yeah. So when we do see that really rare problem, we know what to do. We know to identify it. Oh, and then by the way,
here's what you're going to spend every single day doing the rest of your life, and I'm going to give you a one-hour lecture on how vaccines are safe and effective.
Do you remember your vaccine education?
I do not. I have no memory of
what my vaccine. What does that say about exactly how minimal and forgettable
it was? So I say like doctors are not complicit in this, in that they truly believe, you know, everything I'm just saying, mm-hmm. they truly believe that.
I think so too.
But I think where the complicity comes in, is that a word? Mm-hmm. Is that
it is now?
Is that you make a good point? Because this is the most complex thing they're ever going to do, they should go the extra mile. They should think
not even an extra mile, just any mile. I mean, this is like do something.
Yeah, they should say, okay, this is very controversial. It's not only the most complex part of what I'm going to do. It's really one of the only things some of my patients refuse. It's the only factor that makes me kick patients out of my office, and it's the most complicated part of this. And by the way, hey, I only had an hour lecture on this in medical school. Maybe I should spend a day or two or a week reading this and investigating it. I mean, should do that. So
they don't have to tell anybody they're doing it, but this could be one of those things that they go home at night and go, let me see what this argument is about. Let me just look into this other side because I want to prove it's wrong so that I can feel more strengthened in my original stance. But that's not happening. And I almost feel there is that little, people talk about cognitive dissonance all the time. I think that there is that almost that feel of like, if I open that door, and if I find something, it will literally change the entire way that I approach my pediatric practice.
Oh, yeah. Of
course. And so I think in some ways there are people that are not even doing that because they just don't want to open that door up to the potential that their entire consciousness on how they look at something will have to shift as well. And that's exactly what happens. The more you learn, the more you shift, you realize everything is different from what you're told. And there's so much more to this story. And it's like all of a sudden you've got this warehouse of data going like, holy, I thought it was just these handful of facts right here, but there's so much more to this. And I do think it is the responsibility of pediatricians to, hey, at the very minimum, why don't you just go find out to make sure that your own stance is accurate? Yeah, because let's just say you're going to just go look. And then worst case scenario or best case scenario, you come out of it and go, hey, I totally feel the same way. And now I proved it to myself. And worst case scenario, I say worst because you open that door and all of a sudden you realize like, oh my God, this is not what I thought it was. And good for you to be informed enough. So in the end.
Yeah. And there's an interesting quote that's really stuck with me ever since I read it in from J.B. Hanley's book is the quote comes from Upton Sinclair, who wrote The Jungle, which was basically an expose on a terrible societal wrong, in that people who are like the minimum minimum wage earners, all the workers back in the early part of the 19th century that just were working for almost nothing, and they're just totally being completely ignored by the government, and they were dying and they're being harmed by horrible work conditions. He basically wrote a book about that. And his quote is, "It is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends upon his not understanding it." Yeah. And
I think I underlined that in JB's book.
I mean, that speaks so much. And that's true in the pediatric standpoint, because our whole livelihood is built around checkups and giving kids checkups. And the whole reason, we have such frequent checkups is to work in so many vaccines on the vaccine schedule. That is basically what the whole pediatric process is built around. And for a pediatrician to decide to look into that and look at what the risks of that whole process might be, that's asking a lot of you should be able to ask a doctor to do that because it really matters. But again, thinking of, the whole point is, why do doctors think this way and why do they kick you out for not complying? In part, you're asking them to basically look at their entire career and question, the very basis of what they're doing. And that's, that's hard to do. And then, it's not just that they would lose financially. It's just for their whole reason for being as in their career to have that possibly causing harm to some kids, that's a lot to ask somebody's brain to wrap around. You have every right to ask that because we know it does happen. But again, you know, as far as why are they thinking this way, that's partly why. You kind of would wonder, why don't doctors believe vaccine reactions happen when, you know, when I myself has sat with several thousand families mm-hmm. and heard their stories of horrible vaccine reactions, why am I only the one hearing these? And the problem is that when a patient has a bad reaction to the vaccine at their doctor's office, they leave that practice. And that doctor never sees that patient again and never has to deal with the consequences of that vaccine injury. You might see the patient one more time if the patient comes in, you know, to talk about the vaccine reaction. But if you kick them out, or if they're so mad at you and then they kind of blame you for not warning them about the vaccine reaction and they're gone, they're going to another doctor. No wonder doctors don't know these bad vaccine reactions happen, because you had a seizure the night you got your MMR chickenpox hepatitis A vaccine. You have a seizure, you end up in the ER. You call your doctor that night and they say, oh, that, you know, don't worry yeah. about it. You call your doctor's office the next day. I was in the ER last night for a seizure. The nurse says, how's your baby now? And you say, well, I don't know, they seem okay. And they say, don't worry about it. And then you say, well, why does my doctor not care about mm-hmm. this? No one's paying attention. I'm just going to find a new doctor. Or you see the doctor once and the doctor says it's coincidental, you have to keep vaccinating, seizures just happen anyway. Of course, you're not going to stick around. And then you're gone, and then the doctor never sees you again. So, you know, but whereas if you come back in for every checkup over the next 5 years and your doctor sees your child have developmental problems, your doctor sees your child keep having seizures, your doctor sees your child have a severe reaction to the next vaccine and sees you over and over again, then your doctor is going to start paying attention. But no, all those patients end up at offices like mine, the doctors that do right. see these injuries. And so I think, you know, that's part of the problem. And I guess I would encourage parents to, of course, if you ever have a bad reaction, absolutely go back into your doctor's office so they can at least write down the events, even though they won't agree with you. But you know what? Maybe see them once or twice more if they're reasonable, if they're, you know, reasonably open-minded and they don't kick you out right away, so that you leave a more of an impression on that mm-hmm. about what happened. And if they kicked you out, you know, send them a letter, you know, 2 years later, 5 years later. Hey, you know, and not blaming, not angry, just say, hey, this happened to my child. And I just want to let you know, we stopped vaccinating. We ended up at this other office. And yeah, you know, by the way, my child had seizures for the next 2 years, the seizures that happened the night of vaccines.
Here's what we had to deal with
right.
since then.
Right.
Yeah.
Get, you know, send them pictures. I mean, like, just update them. And maybe that, I mean, I don't know, maybe that would help. Who knows if it would or not, but
it's something.
Yeah. Yeah. So then, to me, doctors will never look at this or change their mind about this unless something happens that changes their mind. Like they see a bad reaction in front of their eyes that's unmistakable. Mm-hmm. There's no question that child was just completely devastated, or it happens to them and their child.
Right.
It
or
happens
a family
in their
member.
Family.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
close friend, maybe.
Right. And then, or they need a place to live for 3 months and their friend, you know, makes them read a book about vaccines and their wife, you know, makes them read the book about vaccines. And, you know, unless an event happens, mm-hmm. they're going to spend their entire, you know, 50-year career
believing what they were
no
told
reason.
Right. when they were 19
right.
or whatever, by whatever textbook was told at that
right.
time.
Right. So let's move on to the financial considerations. So I think that's kind of I'm hoping this is not a big part of this reason why doctors kick you out, but I have a feeling like it might be in some practices. So what I've come to discover, there are basically three areas of financial conflicts of interest or financial reasons why a doctor might kick you out of their office. And I've come across this and heard this from other doctors. So the first reason is insurance companies, medical insurance companies now pay doctors a year-end bonus if they have a very high complete vaccine compliance rate in their office.
And the kids have to be fully vaccinated.
Fully vaccinated.
According to the CDC schedule.
Yeah, and there's a doctor near me who was telling me the story. He's also willing to accept patients who don't vaccinate, and he also takes medical insurance. And he just kisses goodbye his about $4,000 a year year-end bonus because he knows he'll never make that. He says he had to reach 95% full vaccine compliance.
You mean herd immunity?
Yes, I know. I don't know why.
Why is
that's
95?
So funny. They probably picked 95% compliance because that's herd immunity.
They do. It's subliminal. Right. I want to keep these numbers just imprinted.
I never even thought of that. Huh? That's hilarious.
That's what I'm here for, Dr. Bob.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
he knew that he's going to have so many patients that even if they don't want the hepatitis B vaccine.
Right. They have to be fully vaccinated. Right. I remember
so he knew that I'm just not going to accept that financial incentive from the insurance company. Now, if you're a single doctor taking insurance, you are not making much of a living. I know, because single pediatricians can barely scrape a living by on insurance payments. It's very difficult. So bless this doctor for, you know, $3,000 might or $4,000 might not sound like enough if you're, you know, billing, you know, $500,000 a year, but when you're only taking home $100,000 as a pediatrician, you know, that $4,000 matters, I would say. So now if you're a group of doctors that if you have like 10 or 20 pediatricians in your office and you're this big, huge business machine and you have multiple insurance companies and you're missing out on, you know, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000, you know, bonuses per doctors, if you're a very high volume office, you have 10 doctors that you're missing out on $100,000 a year of insurance bonuses by keeping non-vaccinating patients in your office.
Or anybody who wants to delay, space out, opt out of anything. We're not even talking about unvaccinated kids. We're talking about any parents who say, you know what? No, HPV, I don't feel comfortable with that one. And they want to opt out of that one. The missing any doses, potentially delaying, that's the part where people don't understand how that relates to these laws that they're passing, because the laws are passing that they're trying to pass in all the different states are saying you cannot delay, you cannot opt out. It has to be exactly what it is on their particular list. And often their list is not the same thing as the CDC schedule, but it's just the point that if you do want to talk about it over with your spouse and your doctor and say, I'm not really like this one dose of this, then that's enough to not allow you to go to school. And then amplify that to the full CDC schedule, that's enough for a doctor to say, you can't stay here any longer. You cannot receive treatment, even if your child is totally healthy, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so then the other financial incentive or disincentive is, and I heard this, this came from a doctor up in Washington. She took a lot of different HMO plans, and the HMO plans will give you like their golden tier patients or their silver tier or their bronze tier or whatever. It's like kind of like different levels of care.
Metallics.
I mean, it's like, so if you were a pediatrician that took like the gold tier of patients, you would get more patients, you know, in that group. And I don't know if you got paid better. Well, I don't know what made them golden, but basically this HMO would not allow her as a doctor to be labeled as a gold tier provider anymore because she had too many unvaccinating patients. And so,
or not fully compliant,
right? Fully compliant. And so anyone with gold, like with a gold membership in this HMO couldn't select her as a doctor, couldn't come see her. But not only that, she, on their page of doctors, they like list all their doctors. These are all our gold tier doctors.
Right.
And then below them, these are our silver tier
doctors.
So
it affects her reputation.
Right. Exactly. So that was an incentive to comply. And then the other thing that I heard from I heard this from a doctor in Oregon is that insurance companies would not cover vaccines if they were given outside of the CDC schedule. And so this doctor was giving patients vaccines, but in different timings and different ages than the CDC schedule, spaced apart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not giving hepatitis B until the kids were much older. Well, this woman's insurance stopped paying for the vaccine, stopped covering the vaccines. And she called the doctor to complain and said, hey, you're giving me these vaccines out of the schedule, you know, very delayed, and now my insurance won't pay. You should have known that as the doctor. And the doctor's like, I had no idea. They never told me. And so now the insurance isn't covering your vaccine costs at all unless you're giving them on the CDC schedule.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like it's loop after, like, more or hoop, I should say, hoop after hoop that they're, right, that they're creating here for you to have to jump through in order to make it like, it's going to just be inconvenient enough for you that you're going to just be like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll just go, yeah, ahead and do it. And I mean, what does that tell you about your intentions? Because if your intention is just to protect people and show them this is working, it should speak for itself. I've said that before, right? The product should speak for itself.
Yeah.
You should not have to force people to do it. And if there are enough people who are questioning or wondering what's going on with this, or you know, having concerns, manipulating them or punishing them by taking away, punishing doctors that support them, punishing the parents, punishing the children, not getting education. There are so many things that they are doing to create punishment levels that, to me, just from if I were just an outsider, I'd be like, God, why are they going to this extent to really make sure you can't opt out? Like, that's so concerning to me. Like, why,
yeah,
if you really believe, if your thing is just to help kids, then why are you like, you know, witch hunting doctors? Why are you punishing parents? Why are you discriminating against children? I mean, it's like, yeah, it's...
Well, the insurance companies, honestly, they really honestly think that they're doing good. They really think by you know, kind of financially mandating the full program, they actually see that as so good that they're going to have better outcomes, or their clients and, you know, people that have their insurance are going to be healthier. So they, to them, it's all good.
Or they are working together with vaccine manufacturers and pharmaceutical companies who are strong arming them,
yeah,
and are saying, hey, this is what, try doing this kind of program because that's going to make a difference and it needs to come from you. And we will give you a little added bonus for doing that. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I don't know.
There's no way it's independent of that influence, period. No way.
Yeah. I don't know.
Facts.
Okay.
Hashtag facts.
So then the third financial problem is that most doctors are not paid for the extra time they have to spend with you to discuss vaccines. The reason I bailed on medical insurance a long time ago in my office is I wanted to spend, you know, 30 minutes with people on their checkups, but insurance would only pay me $40, you know, for that time. So picture that you're having a checkup with your doctor and your doctor is only getting paid $40. So your doctor has to see 5-6 checkups an hour, you know, just to make $250 in that hour, just so he can pay his nurses and his office staff, pay the rent, and maybe take home $50. You know, your doctor's barely scraping by. So,
not compared to everybody else, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah,
let's not forget. I mean, doctors do a little better than the average.
They do, but the basic pediatrician who's under the basic insurance model, I don't know, especially if they're solo. If they're in a group practice that's a big business machine, no, they probably do better because it's all better organized. But again,
I mean, even $100,000 a year is still more than teachers get paid.
Yes, yeah, still more than most. No, you're right. But the fact is, so they give you your 10 minutes, your baby's healthy. Then it's time for your vaccines. Your doctor's thinking, hey, it's going to take me 30 seconds to order the vaccines and walk out of the door to my next patient. No, you as the patient now say, well, I don't want the hepatitis B vaccine, or I want to get half the shots today and half the shots next month, or I'm thinking I want to delay the shots till my kid's 2. Immediately, your doctor's thinking, 2 more patients are waiting, and I'm not even going to get paid for the you know, 10 minutes now you're extra you're going to make me spend with you talking about this.
Yeah,
so that's your doctor's mindset, and it's frustrating for them. But it's all, and they know they're not getting paid for the time. Now, insurance companies have a billing code where if they spend extra time, you can add this extra code and get paid more for it. Most insurances don't pay that extra money. They just deny it anyway. But
that was one of the things we talked about in the Senate hearing, right? They were saying they need to be one of the
Doctors want to be paid for this time so they can spend the time
with
you.
They said that's how you can convince more people to have education.
Right, but they're not paid for the time. So again, a doctor is thinking, gosh, every patient, you know, double the time for their checkups now. If I just stop seeing these patients, then I'm going to be able to stay on time and see all my patients and not get behind and again, you know, make my $100,000. So again, that's another financial issue. And I hope these financial incentives are not a big factor for most offices. I would say doctors that make these mandatory rules, I think in their mind, they're sort of, you know, maybe telling themselves it's because we don't want a measles outbreak to come into our office. It's because we have, you know, patients, you know, on chemotherapy come into our office and we don't want, you know, anyone to have, you know, chicken pox or the flu in our waiting room at the same time as someone who has chemotherapy. But realistically,
how many patients do you think that they have that are on chemotherapy?
I would say zero.
Yeah.
In private practices. Because honestly, when patients are on chemotherapy, they don't go to their regular pediatrician. I've had several patients with leukemia. I diagnose them. I don't see them for 2 years because their oncologist doesn't want them in a pediatrician's office. Where
that's what I'm thinking.
Right. So no, the chance that somebody who's severely immune compromised is going to be in that waiting room with an infectious disease is so low that no, it's not a realistic reason, but in their mind, that's what pediatricians think.
You think, and I agree with you, that even for the ones that do agree that vaccine reactions happen or may happen or happen rarely or whatever, they still think the disease risk is greater. This is what you're saying, right?
Right.
What I want to know is how come doctors don't know the actual prevalence of disease today? How come they don't know the actual risk of a disease today and the actual mortality from disease today? How come they don't know those numbers? How come I know those numbers and they don't know those numbers? So in other words, again, if the year were 1900 and you were saying, hey, I don't want to have unvaccinated kids in here because the risk of these diseases is too great, even if vaccine reactions happen occasionally. But it's not 1900. Right. So we are in a climate now where we don't see certain diseases. And I absolutely hate when people argue, well, why don't you think we don't see them because of vaccines? It's like, who cares? Even if that's true, that is completely like away from this discussion. It's irrelevant. Right. What's relevant is how many cases of disease do we see now?
Yeah. Are you going to see measles in your waiting room?
Yeah. What is the actual prevalence? Are people dying of it left and right? I mean, like the actual risk of the diseases. So, you know, remember, I think what you're describing here, it totally embodies the two doctors that we talked with on the middle ground episode. Two doctors who I think genuinely believe what they're told. But if I have access to find out how rarely these diseases are happening and how rarely they're transmitted from unvaccinated children and how the vaccine is not protecting the spread and the statistics that we bring to this and that you and I discuss, I know them. How come doctors don't know them?
Right. They there would be no reason they would know all that because they've never been the kind of doctor who has personally investigated all this.
But I mean,
doctors aren't taught, you know, that the DTP, you know, vaccine doesn't prevent the spread and that the polio vaccine doesn't prevent the spread and they're just not taught any of this.
Okay, but
They wouldn't know. To them, honestly, to them, they probably think all vaccines are equally magical and completely prevent every aspect of disease transmission.
Okay, but that is so completely ignorant
of
this conversation. But doctors are the ones that are looked at for their intelligence level on this conversation. Yeah. You hear all the time, but I'm going to trust the doctor on this who's trained for this. If you can't even tell me about asymptomatic transmission of certain pathogens that we know are not protected by the vaccine that you think everybody needs to have in order to stay in your practice, if you can't even tell me that, then why are you touted as the intelligently superior person on this issue? I mean, like, so a doctor is supposed to go, you're supposed to be able to trust a doctor because they're supposed to be smarter than the average Joe because they've trained in this, right? And so they're supposed to have an intellect level higher than anybody else in traditional jobs. If they don't know the basis of infectious diseases today, the prevalence of these diseases today, right, and what the vaccine is or isn't doing for that particular disease today, how can we use them as the expert teacher as it relates to this conversation? And why aren't most people understanding how parents can be actually more educated than their doctors on this topic? I mean, like, the fact that they can just believe what 1950 said and they just tend to still believe it, or the fact that doctor in the middle ground said 80,000 people die from the flu. I'm like, the ignorance of those comments, if you just look at the vital statistics records and you can see the amount of deaths attributed to influenza, you realize that's not anywhere close to being true. Right. Why do I have to listen to him because he's the expert on this? Do you know what I'm saying?
I know. It makes no sense. And I think more and more parents are realizing what you now realize.
But media does not allow for that. Doctors are not allowing for that realization.
Right.
And the medical organizations as a whole,
because doctors are so uneducated about this, that's why parents aren't trusting their doctor's advice when it comes to vaccines anymore. So it's a whole interesting situation. And I remember, you know, I just don't understand why pediatricians would think, hepatitis B, you know, if my babies in my practice don't get hepatitis B, now no one in my waiting room is safe. And so it's strange that doctors would look at basically, they know, I mean, maybe having everyone in their office have a measles vaccine, maybe that's going to help protect their waiting room from a measles outbreak. But it's not going to help all the other vaccines for the most part. It's not going to make any sort of difference. So why make this blanket statement that you have to get every single vaccine on time? It can't all be about having your waiting room safe. It can't. And so I think a lot of it comes down for the whole program. It's probably more about the financial incentives as far as the whole program goes. But I think they sort of justify it with measles. They use measles to justify it and make sure that's the reason we're standing on our soapbox talking about this, and we'll just mandate all of them.
You know, and do you think some of these doctors kind of get a little bit bullied from other doctors in practice if, like, let's say they're part of a group and 8 out of 10 of the doctors feel like this is the way to go, and 2 of them go, well, that's not really fair to kick out people that they sort of feel pressured to go along with it, majority rules kind of thing. Well, there's that chance.
No, there is. And then doctors will leave practices. And a doctor near where I live, he had to retire. You know, he was writing medical exemptions, and he was had a lot of unvaccinated patients, but he's part of a big group, and basically all the young doctors in his group voted him out, and he had to retire because their practice wanted to make vaccines mandatory. Let's see. I mean, I don't know if I've touched every point. So I guess maybe the question is you as a patient. I would say if you're looking for a doctor to give you medical care, and the office already has that mandatory policy on vaccines, I would say don't waste your time.
Oh yeah,
there's no way you're convincing them. And so that's probably your first question when you call their office.
Plus, who wants to have that argument every time you're in there?
So don't waste your time. Just if you have a doctor that's open to accepting you without getting all the vaccines and without even getting any vaccines, make sure they have at least that policy before you go there, even the first time. And then, your first appointment, and maybe you're a newborn, you're not even really talking about vaccines, the newborn, just focus on the newborn stuff. Make a separate vaccine appointment with that doctor so that your doctor can get paid for the 10, 15, 20 minutes he or she is going to spend with you discussing vaccines instead of trying to work it into a checkup. But I want to go through this interesting article real quick. I don't know. It's kind of a long episode, huh?
But it sure is.
but there's you kind of wonder what is the pediatric society's what are they doing about this problem? What is the American Academy of Pediatrics doing about all these families that are refusing vaccines and they can no longer go to these practices and doctors are kicking them out? Is the AAP trying to find a middle ground and trying to find ways to serve these patients and try to get everyone back on the same page so everyone can go to pediatricians again? No, they're not.
Spoiler alert.
I know. Yes, no. No, they're not. They're basically focusing on how do you convince patients to fully vaccinate? Not how do you understand where patients are coming from? How do you listen to them and meet them halfway? No, it's how do you get them to fully vaccinate? And the AAP has this magazine they put out every month called Pediatric News. And there was a front page article called Vaccine Hesitant Parents. Discussing immunization requires caring, individualized approach. And again, you think this article would be, how do you understand these parents and how, you know, how can you be sensitive and how can you listen to them and how can you maybe meet, you know, again, get them to vaccinate, even if you have to do it more slowly.
And or how about, how do we find a solution for the problems people are encountering, these real problems? How can we find a solution for them so those problems don't happen, not how we can just convince them to move along?
Yes. It's not, you never see the articles about what about vaccine adverse events? What about severe reactions? What can we do about that?
Yeah.
Never. It's all about how do you get vaccine hesitant parents to comply? And then basically they say putting parents at ease, making vaccination the default option during discussions, and appealing to their identity as good parents, and focusing on positive word choice during discussions are the techniques that we've found that get vaccine hesitant parents to immunize their children. Again, they're leaving out all the humanity and the what you would expect, you know, caring, sensitive doctors to say. And again, it's all about how can we use good PR techniques to get you to comply. They say our goal is not to win the debate. You don't have to correct every mistaken idea. These parents, Siri wants to help us out. Sorry, Siri, I don't need your help. These vaccine hesitant parents they feel so strongly about their beliefs. Their belief is so much stronger than our proof, and their belief will not be changed by evidence, is what they're recommending. You're not going to change these parents' mind with any sort of scientific evidence. So again, you have to resort to techniques. So they basically developed a framework for pediatricians and educators to use to talk to these families. They basically have four areas. Let's see. They say, however, presenting information that the parent may have already seen, such as vaccination data from the FDA or CDC, may actually alienate parents who believe those groups are not trustworthy. So they even say, don't even try to use the CDC information. They say the researchers found that no informational intervention was helpful in persuading parents to vaccinate if they already were unfavorable towards vaccination. There's no medical information you can give them that's going to change their mind, which is very surprising. If the medical information is so good and so solid, you should be able to change their mind. So they found four rhetorical devices that you include in your conversations with patients. The first one is cognitive ease, which means creating an environment which the patient is relaxed, comfortable, and more likely to be agreeable, which doesn't sound like any visit if you're questioning about vaccines.
Right.
So they're saying try to get away from that being, you know, mean and nasty to these patients. Put them at cognitive ease. Natural assumption, and that probably goes back to the making vaccination the default option. Just assume they're going to vaccinate as you discuss.
That's
natural
the normal
assumption.
That's
yeah,
the normal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How you are offering the vaccination also matters. Rather than asking a patient if they want to vaccinate, instead frame the discussion as vaccines are the default option. Is your child due for a flu vaccination this year? Yes, he is. Let's get that taken care of right away. instead of asking the patient, have you thought about your flu vaccine this year?
Mm-hmm. Right. It's the assumptive close.
Right.
They use that in marketing.
Same exactly. Thing. Exactly.
These are like sales techniques.
I know.
Using sales to sell regular products.
Yeah.
This is sick.
And the doctor in this study says that they have research that backs up this approach. An appeal to identity. Another strategy is appealing to the patient's identity as a good parent and link the concept of vaccination with the good parent identity. And then use of advantageous terms, protection, health, safety, what's best. Stay with a positive messaging.
Being a good parent, right?
That's what you're saying? Right. Stay away from negative terms like autism and side effects. So they're really kind of playing the PR game here. And again, it concerns me that the message from the American Academy of Pediatrics is, don't have medical scientific discussions with your patients. You won't change their mind. And why is that? It's because these parents have very good, solid medical scientific reasons why they have concerns about the entire CDC schedule. No medical argument can counter that. Therefore, you need to turn to other types of arguments.
Right.
It's very, very telling and then concerning. And so, you know, what? I don't know. What's the solution? What's the solution to all this? I think
if doctors started their own personal research away from what they're just given from the CDC and the AAP, they would have an understanding of where parents are coming from. And we would find a lot more common ground that way because mm-hmm. they would find what we've found. And they would understand it's not that crazy then to sort of think that you might want to opt out here, opt out there. And obviously, money can't be a driving factor. That's obviously another big portion of it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, my advice, don't even waste time trying to change a doctor's mind who's closed-minded about this. Just find a doctor who at least will see you and accept you and not give you a hard time about it. And if you're not getting that, then just, you know, go online and look for doctors that will accept you and be very open-minded and who have, you know, that kind of practice. So, all right. Well, so hopefully we gave you some things to think about and kind of understand the doctor's mindset on this. And I don't know if you have a doctor that you think, you know, could benefit from hearing this message. I don't know. Did I say anything that was mean about doctors?
I don't think so.
You did.
Well, anyway, you're allowed to because you are a doctor, so it's different.
Yeah. But I think, you know, I think everyone needs a doctor. And again, I think this, I don't know. I think, you know, it's ironic that if not vaccinating is so dangerous, you would think that the AAP would think, okay, these families need doctors more than ever. So let's figure out.
Yeah, if it makes you more sick.
Yeah, let's not kick them out. Let's
you know. So let's think about that. Is there a chance that somewhere in that bunker of data that they keep, that they might know that children who are lesser vaccinated or unvaccinated are actually healthier, so therefore they actually don't worry about them being without medical care? Because don't you
That's
think, where's the argument to say that we've got these sickly kids running around, now they're going to be taking up our ERs and all this stuff because they don't have regular primary care physicians that will see them? You don't see that argument because these kids aren't sickly.
Right, or they don't want pediatricians to keep seeing these kids and suspect
being aware that theory of their good health
might actually be true. That's very interesting. I don't know.
You're welcome.
Right. All right. Well, that was a long episode of the Vaccine Conversation. But
let's wrap it up with Melinda and Dr. Bob. And thank you all for listening.
No, but I appreciate you hanging in there. And again, I think we've done a lot of current event episodes over the last few weeks. I feel like most of what we've done is these current events. I know. And I think I want to get back to kind of the, keep getting back to these basic episodes that are timeless. We will move forward with a lot of those. And what do we have coming up?
Another episode.
No, we have another episode that's like a timely episode.
I know. We can do it.
But anyway, it's a fun one. And anyway,
we need to announce the day that we're going to do the live Q&A Facebook
Yeah. So let's do that on the next episode, and we'll figure out what day that's going to be, and then we'll.
Okay.
We got to pick a day.
Okay. Bye, listeners. Thank you so much.
Let's keep it rolling, and you and I can like pick a day right now. All right.
Well, let's pick a day. I mean, let's do this. But synchronize your calendar.
I know. What are you doing? Let's see. I can't do it Saturday the 30th.
Does it have to be a Saturday, right?
Do you want to do a Saturday?
Sure. Let's do the 6th, April 6th.
Okay. Facebook. Okay, maybe April 6th, Facebook 9
Live.
O'clock a.m.
Okay, Facebook, sure.
Yeah, okay.
9 o'clock a.m., Facebook Live, April 6th. We're going to do a full hour of Q&A. Are we going to podcast it?
Yeah, live, okay. Facebook. Yeah, Facebook Live. Oh, yeah, Facebook Live and podcast.
So we're going to have a separate thing that we can actually look at people's, so we can have one of our phones for the camera and then have something we can actually read their stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, join us. Yeah. So join us April 6th,
9 a.m.
Saturday, 9 a.m. for Facebook Live. And we have to clarify that the Facebook Live will be on the Immunity Education Group Facebook page, not Melissa's page, because the last one we did was on your page. Personal page. This will be on the Immunity Education Group Facebook page. So find us there. It'll be at 9 a.m. Pacific time. I got to specify that, right? You know, ask us, anything that's been, on your mind that you want us to talk for, 5 minutes on, and we'll just go through all the questions. And
okay, we were not going to be able to answer everybody's questions. I just want you to know.
Will.
No, we will
I
not.
Will stay until...
yeah, right.
Until...
I know it's hard sometimes. All the questions come pouring in kind of at once. So make sure it's something that's really... Now, it doesn't have to be like disease-related. It could totally be like, hey, Dr. Bob, what was your feeling when this happened or whatever? Or it could be, Melissa... Oh, yeah.
Personal questions,
how do you get
I
your
guess?
Bangs so straight? Or... we're here to be available to you, to socialize with you guys and to connect with you, and in a way that we can't do live on podcasts as easily. So we'll try to incorporate this every now and then that we can do something like this for you guys too. So yeah. April 6th, yeah. Mark it down in your calendars.
Cool.
We're signing off.
Rate and review us and share us. And don't forget to check out the link on that will give you the link to our resources. Our link that's pinned to the top of our Immunity Education Facebook page, our link that's on our Immunity Education Group .org website, our podcast page there has a link to all the resources we've used in all of the episodes, all on one page.
So far, just episodes 1 through 10.
Okay, but I feel by the time this airs, you'll have gotten done with the
1 through
ones.
10. I'm doing 10 at a time.
Okay, yeah, we're doing 10 at a time, so I don't know when
be
we'll
patient,
get the rest of
my
these.
Loves.
Yeah.
Be patient.
Anyway, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
The information in this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as medical advice. Always consult your healthcare professional for information on vaccines and infectious diseases.